This is a HeadGum Podcast.
While Andrew and Craig believe the joy of discovery is crucial to enjoying any well-told tale, they will not shy away from spoiling specific story beats when necessary. Plus, these are books you should have read by now.
How's it going?
Hi, Craig. How are you?
Good.
Why don't
great.
You say the name of the podcast we're going
to
do?
Hey, welcome to Overdue. This is a podcast about the books you've been meaning to read. My name is Craig.
My name is Andrew, obviously.
Oh, hey! Man.
Get pumped for some books.
Get pumped for books! Let me hear it for reading! Who's a big fan of words?
Words are the best!
Words are the best. Not curse words, though. We're going to try and keep it family-friendly.
Curse words are the best, just like people need to be old enough to use them first.
Yeah, and we are not. We are here at the...
Tattooed Mom.
Tattooed Mom is part of the Philadelphia Podcast Festival. Thanks, everyone, for coming out. Andrew, before
Craig.
We get started with this week's book, this year's live book, Watership Down by Richard Adams, you wanted to talk about a very appropriate topic.
I wanted to talk about the very important topic of mom tattoos.
It's very important. Very important.
If your mom had a tattoo, ooh, what tattoo would your mom have?
Now, I found out the other day that my mom was going to be here, so this segment is way easier for me. She'll probably listen later. It'll be great. Make it really weird. So my mom has gone through a couple of different phases of things that she's into.
Okay.
When I was young, it was ducks.
Wait, how would you be into ducks?
Like, you would get her, like, carved wooden ducks, and she'd go, that's a great present.
I would do that now.
Yeah, she'd be a blast from the past. You've never given my mom a gift. You should start. She's also been into elephants. That's like a bedrock of her interest is elephants.
So mom just has an animal thing.
Well, she joined like a cloud club. Like she's into clouds.
Whoa, like cumulonimbus?
She has a certificate. Yeah, she's into clouds. So I think that her tattoo
would be the Windows XP like default desktop wallpaper.
Clouds. Yes, if there was a cloud with an elephant and like a duck biting the bugs off an elephant, and there's like a Scottish flag in the background, maybe?
That's very complicated.
Yeah, it's going to take 10 hours. It's going to hurt a lot. What about
your mom? My answer is either a smiley face emoji, because I got her an iPhone last year and she loves emoji, or her email address is me and my sister and my brother's initials with a number after it, so maybe just that.
I love your mom so much.
Yeah, I like my mom too.
Okay, what's
right,
your next
so
question?
If you, what is the worst tattoo that your mom could have that you would find out about? And that would just like fundamentally change how you thought about your mom?
Oh, okay, because I thought that if it wasn't going to change anything I thought about my mom, it would be a picture of the man who used to play Stefano on Days of Our Lives. That wouldn't change anything about how I feel about my mom. That would make me love her more.
Your mom is the funniest person on this podcast right now.
She's pretty good. If it were going to change how I thought about her, it would be a lyric from what band was Tommy? Yeah, Motley Crue. Thank you. What's going on in this room?
So your mom get Motley Crue lyrics on her?
Yeah, that would be the worst thing that I could imagine. You could also tell that I can't really imagine it. That should tell you how bad it would be.
Okay, all right. That's acceptable.
What's the worst thing your mom could get?
Do you know when you Google bad tattoos or you go to like badtattoosorry.tumblr.com?
Yeah.
And they're like always of people's, like human beings' faces.
That's the worst idea.
So yeah, any
those change over time.
Any human being's face.
What's the
my mom?
What's the conversion rate for like your age, like years, mm-hmm. right? And like the age of a tattoo's
face. So like
face.
How many years does your back have to age to make the tattoo's face age?
And to make it more attractive again. When it comes back around.
I don't... 100?
Let's talk about your mom's back more.
Let's talk... Okay, great, cool. And then what's the last mom tattoo category?
What's the momest tattoo?
What is the momest tattoo? The most mom tattoo. I can go first this time. Is there a tattoo that would invoke the way that you feel when you've waited just a little too long to get seated at a restaurant?
Like a tattoo of someone half raising their hand to the hostess?
Yeah.
But not really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like holding a menu like, all right, we've picked out what we want. If they can just sit us, we have to catch this like showing of trolls in 20 minutes.
Yeah, I did. I finished my water like 5 minutes ago and they haven't refilled it yet.
Yeah. I'm going to bring it back to...
Going to be late for the Motley Crue concert.
The Momley Crue concert. I'm going to walk it back to my mom and I'm going to say that the mom's tattoo would be a tattoo on someone's like heart, right? Not on the actual organ, that'd be dangerous, mm-hmm. but on the chest that said hashtag I love my kids. It goes down. That is in the lot. Tweets are in the Library of Congress. My mom tweeted something that said hashtag I love my kids. Obama can look at it whenever he wants. Should we talk about this book?
Good, yeah. No, I think we got all the jokes out of that.
This is a book podcast, yeah. I think.
If people haven't listened before, what do we do?
We talk about a book every week. One mm-hmm. of us has read it. The other one usually has not, or mm-hmm. at least not for the show. So we talk about the author a little bit as there's information for us. And when there isn't, we talk about mom tattoos. Mm-hmm.
So, Craig, you read the book for this year's live show. What did you read and who is it by? And tell me more.
Yeah, Richard Adams wrote a book called Watership Down. Mm-hmm. And it's about bunnies.
Okay. Sounds cute so far.
Yeah, it is kind of cute. Richard Adams, he's like a British dude, right?
He was exactly. You got it right on the head.
Thanks.
He was born in 1920. Dude is still kicking. He's 96 years old. Congratulations, old. Richard Adams, for being old. He is known for Watership Down, a book called Shardik.
And it's about a giant bear.
Cool.
That book looks cool. Why didn't we read
Shardik? And one called The Plague Dogs,
ooh,
which is my favorite HBO original series.
Based on the novel Push by Sapphire.
He served in the British Army in World War II. Served in Palestine, Europe, and the Far East, which I guess it's probably a real country that we just didn't call anything at the time. But he saw no direct action, and then he became a full-time author.
Wait, don't put him on blast like that.
Why not?
You don't know what kind of action he saw.
He didn't fight anybody.
Oh. Okay.
He became a full-time author in 1974. Watership Down, it started as a story that he was telling his daughters.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was just like in the car with his daughters and they were like, tell us a story. And he's like, well, they were British, so it was like,
tell us a story.
Tell us a story. Tell us a story, Gov. And he said, all right, I'll tell you a story about bunnies and their names are Azel and Fiver, I guess. And then it was, and then it's like a really horrifying tale about bunnies sweating for their lives.
So they, for some reason, wanted him to write it down. I think probably just because they wanted him to stop telling it to them. And that process took 2 years. The manuscript got turned down by 4 publishers and 3 writers' agencies.
Yeah, I had like 7 or 13 rejections, depending on how bad you want to make him feel.
Okay, we'll say 7.
Yeah.
And then it was published to immediate acclaim. So
yeah, published by a guy named Rex Collings, who was quoted in his... He wasn't quoted in his obituary. They put a quote of his in his obituary.
It's really rough being dead. I had a good run, but...
Sir, you've just died. Would you like to comment? He said, I've just taken on a novel about rabbits, one of them with extrasensory perception. Do you think I'm mad? He wrote to an associate. And Adams also credits Collings with the title of the book, which, like, I mean, it's in the book. He didn't do a lot of work. We disparage another dead guy, I guess. That's most of the show.
Put him all on blast. Uh-huh. It became a film in 1978, which I have watched and you have not.
Nope, haven't watched it. There's a lot of hush fell over the crowd.
It was a TV show from 1999 to 2001, and the BBC and Netflix are making a new four-hour miniseries.
Yeah.
For £20 million. Which is $26.1 million.
Are they training real rabbits to do it? I also saw some articles saying that like it wasn't going to be as gruesome, and they should call it Watered Ship Down. I feed on your disdain.
And my favorite... A Watership Down-based piece of media is it's called Bunnies and Burrows, and it's a 1976 tabletop RPG in the vein of Dungeons & Dragons.
It uses the GURPS system for all you nerds out there.
God, nerds. Non-human players, so you're just playing as bunnies. It emphasizes role-playing over combat because you can't fight anybody because you're a bunny. And it utilizes a martial arts system called Bun Fu.
That's a good one.
That's pretty good.
Apparently, American reviewers did not like Watership Down as much as the British. Initial reviews, one from Keith Mano, declared that it was pleasant enough, but it has about the same intellectual firepower as Dumbo. He also said that... Watership Down is an adventure story, no more than that, rather a swashbuckling crude one to boot. There are virtuous rabbits and bad rabbits. If that's allegory, Bonanza is an allegory. Some very specific shade, I would think.
Do you think he just hated Bonanza and like every bad review he wrote, oh, this is worse than Bonanza.
He was trying to advance an anti-Bonanza platform, yeah. I don't know. What else do you want to do? Should we just get in the book?
I think we should just get into the book.
Okay.
Because it's about bunnies.
It is
that's
about
what we're
bunnies.
Here to talk.
Have you
about
ever
today.
Owned a bunny, Andrew?
Have I ever owned a bunny? No.
No, neither have I.
Good question.
Great. Moving on.
Have you ever wanted to own a bunny? Why haven't you owned a bunny?
We had cats. We had two dogs.
Just not enough room.
Not enough room in the inn. My sister had a hamster once. It peed on my aunt, so we didn't get any more hamsters after that.
I think they would poop everywhere. That's all I got.
What, bunnies?
Yeah bunnies.
They poop all the time. In this book, it's called Hraka.
Tell me about Watership Down.
Okay, great. So Watership Down is about a... It's about a bunch of bunnies. Why was I going to say that sentence? You already know that. Everyone here already knows that. We have a bunch of heroes that we meet at Sandleford Warren.
Okay.
Which is in like Berkshire, UK, somewhere in rural Great Britain, whatever. And they're living there, and it's pretty cool, right? Bunnies have a pretty cool life. They don't have to like pay any bills. They don't have to go to college. They don't have to pay to go to college. They don't have to vote in elections. But they're just chilling in the fields, and you meet Hazel and Fiver.
Okay.
Fiver is interesting, because he's a bit of a runt, right?
Okay.
Hazel's like, he's like a guy. He just hangs out. He's, you know, he's nondescript. He's just there, but he is the protagonist, so he's going to become better than he is,
mm-hmm.
right? Fiver, he's a runt. It's weird that his name is Fiver, because according to this book, rabbits can't count past four. It's really weird.
Why would that need to be part of your lore for this book?
It's funny. They have a word called chrer, and it means... many or thousand? So they go 1, 2, 3, 4, 1,000. But then there's this bunny named Fiver. I guess like he's special. It's like how Ender Wiggin is a third
or something like other books where there's like someone has broken the mold, right?
He is an not an outcast, but he's seen as of lesser value to his society.
Well, and he's not tough, and apparently rabbits need to be tough.
Mm-hmm. That's the thing I know about rabbits.
That's the best thing I know about rabbits. So Fiverr is also a psychic. He's the psychic bunny.
Like a Pokemon?
He is. Guys, Tattooed Mom is a gym. If you are on red team, you need to do your job. You can leave this podcast and take over this gym. I will not fault you. He is a grass psychic type Pokemon. Mm-hmm. And he and Hazel, Laura's laughing, my wife's laughing because I'm not sure if she knows what that means, and she's surprised that I do. And she's embarrassed. It's cool. So Hazel and Fiverr see this like sign, and they don't know what writing is, right? But they see this sign in their field that the reader gets to learn that someone is going to develop this land and put a bunch of houses here. And rabbits hate houses, I guess. So Fiverr is concerned. He sees a vision of the field covered in blood. And it's, and he says to Hazel, like, we got to get out of here. And Hazel's like, why? He's like, because I had a vision. He's like, all right, great. They're brothers. It's fine. He believes him. So they go to the chief rabbit of the warren named Thru-Ra. Ra is a suffix that denotes like authority in the rabbit world. I'm checking to see my rabbit
people
folks.
People know that. I don't know why you're bringing this up.
I don't know why I'm just checking in. Yeah. And he doesn't believe them. He's like, that's weird. Get out of here. And Hazel and Fiverr are like, it is weird, and we do have to get out of here, so we should go. On their plan to escape, they are met by Bigwig, who is like he's a part of the Ausla. The Ausla, who is the rabbit cops.
He is named this fall on ABC.
Bad bunnies, what are you gonna do? When they come for you. Bigwig is so named because he has a weird thing on his head that I guess is the bunny equivalent of a man bun.
Feel about that how
you will. So he joins them and he's like, I don't really like how the Thru-Ra is doing things, so I'm going to leave too. And they grab a bunch of other bunnies who are willing to come with them. It sort of becomes like Bunny Ocean's 11. So we've got Hazel, who I guess is your George Clooney.
Did you assign Ocean's 11 roles to all these bunnies?
I didn't not do that. Bigwig is your Bernie Mac. Rip in peace.
Rip in peace, Bernie Mac.
Blackberry is the brains of the operation. I think he's your Don Cheadle.
Okay.
We're going to need a pinch on this one, Gov. Dandelion is... That's a deep cut Ocean's 11 joke.
Shut up.
Dandelion is the storyteller, which I don't remember from Ocean's 11, but I guess it's Brad Pitt.
So what you're saying is that you're spending a lot of time on an analogy that kind of falls apart about halfway through.
not saying that. Then there's Fiverr, of course. He's the psychic. Every heist has a psychic, please.
Mm-hmm. It's Matt Damon.
Then there's a couple others that we meet along the way. There's like Pipkin, whose defining characteristic is that he's little. Later in the story, Holly and Bluebell join them. Bluebell's like a jokester. Holly is a former captain. And then there's a bunch of other guys that are just hanging around, like Acorn and Buckthorn and Speedwell and Hawkbit. And like, if I just started saying Jinglepuss, Snot Rocket, Farm Boy, like, you wouldn't know that I was not naming rabbits in Watership Down. And then they meet some other rabbits at other warrens on the way. So they got to get out of there. They got to get out of Sandalford.
And do they know where they are going?
Not a clue.
Okay.
Fiverr has this vague psychic sense. I don't know if you ever called... I've never called a psychic.
I did get my palm read in New Orleans once.
What did you learn?
Nothing.
So you know...
I learned that if you speak with confidence, people will believe a lot of stuff that you say.
Yeah, I've watched the news. So it's very political this week. I'm feeling a little... So, yeah, they don't know where they're going. Fiverr's like, we gotta get up on that hill over there, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And so they set out. And everyone's kind of looking at Hazel like, you made the call, dude. Tell us where to go. And he doesn't really know. He's just like kind of following his instincts. So they have a lot of trials and tribulations. The biggest one of which is that they have to cross this river. They have to ford this river at one point. Like Dandelion's hurt, and Pipkin, again, he's the little one, so he's having trouble swimming. And Blackberry invents, air quotes, floating? Like, he invents boats, sort of? Like, he sees a board, and he's like, whoa, that stays on top of the water. Stand on it. Let's see what happens. And Hazel's mind is blown. Most of the rabbits are like, I actually don't understand what's happening, but I will push this thing that has rabbits on it across the river.
That's how I see the world, is when I discover something, it's because I invented it myself.
Yeah. I think rabbits feel about floating the way that I feel about the internet. Like, it's just a thing I use, and I don't know how it works.
But you like it.
I do like it.
But you don't know how.
I don't know what it is. Okay. So after they make this very important ford across the river, we get the first of, and we can kind of have a longer discussion about this now, we get the first story that Dandelion tells. And one of the things that I think aligns this book as an adventure story, you and I were talking about this the other day, mm-hmm. it puts it in the canon, or attempts to put itself in the canon, or at least in the conversation with stuff like Lord of the Rings, with your C.S. Lewis novels.
Yeah, I think more with Narnia, because that's more talking animal-y. Like, we were talking about where this book fits in the pantheon of talking animal books. Narnia came out, like, a couple decades before.
Yep.
And is a lot of talking animals. I think a lot of people in this room probably read either, like, Redwall or Rats of Nim, which are both. Yeah. Yeah, lots of Rats of Nim fans in here.
I don't think those rats were treated very well.
Lots of, I'm going to dub us Nimrods. Lots of Nimrods in here.
Yep. Looking at one right now.
Thank you. But yeah, I think like those books owe to Watership Down what Watership Down. I don't know that Watership Down like owes a ton to Narnia, but it's...
It seems to owe a lot to Tolkien, mm-hmm. in just in terms of how Richard Adams builds this fantasy universe where there are psychic rabbits.
And they can't count above four.
They can't count above four. They do have their own language. I have notes about it somewhere here.
Oh, my God.
Important words to know from the rabbit language that apparently if you're making up a language, this is where he differs from Tolkien. He didn't just sit and make up a whole rabbit language and then write a book about it. Because Tolkien just loved languages, mm-hmm. right? No, he only made up words as he discovered that he needed them. Which so
it's
feels
like, it's like Klingon a little bit more.
It's a little messy. So a car is a hlududu. It's like onomatopoeia. Like a car.
I'm just like so entranced by the thing you're doing with your throat.
God. There's hrer, which is the number above four. That's important because apparently in their mythology that I'm trying to build us into a conversation of, every other animal that likes to eat rabbits is part of the thousand, you know. So they're the hrer. Elil are also individual creatures that would do harm to them. Silfle, which is a word he came up with, means to go above ground to feed, okay. which he realized was a thing that rabbits do enough that they probably had a word for it.
Not just eating?
Yeah, it's not. Well, it's specifically eating outside.
Okay.
Like barbecuing.
Mm-hmm.
Has anyone... I've never barbecued a rabbit. There's another word called tharn, which is the particular type of rabbit fear where they are paralyzed and it's gone. I'm shaking in tharn right now. Yeah, they have a very specific fear. Those are just some of the words. There's other ones that just kind of crop up that are less important.
Okay, I watched this movie.
Oh,
like this morning was yes. I woke up and I watched Watership Down, which is a great way to start your day.
I was watching Rhythmic Gymnastics.
And the movie begins with this little examination of bunny mythology. So I'm going to give you what the movie's version is, and you can like tell me how closely it tracks the book.
Yeah, great.
So there's this sky jerk.
Yeah, his name is Frith.
Yeah, and he makes all the animals.
Yes, he makes all of them.
And they all look mostly the same.
Yeah, I don't... How does that portray... It's kind of
they
like...
all... In the cartoon, they all look different. I don't know why they said they look the same, because they do all
the
look different.
The book is like, it's just a bunch of shapeless blobs that all existed, and then Frith was like, they should be different, I guess.
So they were all living in harmony, but then the bunny had a bunch of other bunnies.
Like bunnies do,
and they ate all the food.
Yes.
And so the sun jerk, the sky guy, said... He decided to punish the bunnies by turning all the other animals into stuff that really wanted to eat bunnies. And this is set up a worldview where everything and everyone hates bunnies like so much.
Yes.
It's the only reason anything else exists is to kill bunnies.
To eat bunnies! this is part of the story called The Blessings of El Harira. El Harira means literally prince with 1,000 enemies. If you've been following the rabbit language that I've been bestowing upon you this past 30 minutes. And Frith, Sky Guy, thank you for that translation, saw that his people were out of control. So he did. He gave a gift to every animal that was like claws or barking. Or
like a gun.
Or a gun. Yeah, men have gun in this book. They also, men in this book smoke a lot of cigarettes.
It was the 70s.
Yeah, not cool for kids. And yes, he gave all of the animals the desire to eat rabbit.
But then he gave the rabbit
cunning.
Like, cunning and like really good running legs. And he's like, you're welcome, rabbits.
When you're...
I made everything in the world want to kill you, but you're like pretty good at running from it, at least.
When you, Andrew, play that bunny game and one of your bunny friends dies, the idiom you will use is that he has stopped running.
Mm-hmm. Because he's dead.
Yes, I got an awe over there. Yeah, because he's dead. And so the rest of this mythology plays out over the course of the book as they use these stories to build community, to make themselves feel better. The next major plot point is that they are invited to join this warren run by a guy named Cowslip. And all of these... I know, it's weird.
Not a good name.
Not a great name.
Do you think he picked it for himself, or... Did somebody give it to him? Or
he's like picked it out of a hat.
Yeah.
Or like two dice, and there's like an animals and then like a verb.
Mm-hmm.
Why didn't I get bull run? Yeah. I got cow slip. And at one point, they're in this warren with the cow slip guy and the rest of his bunnies. And they're a little confused because these bunnies are acting a little weird. They're bigger than normal. They don't seem to know how to fight. They don't talk about where other rabbits go, and everyone's like, what? And they have art? Like, they put, like, stones in the wall? And they're like, what, you've never seen a shape before? And like, we're just making art in our warren. And Hazel's like...
That's how I feel when I go into a museum. Like, what are you doing?
Can I just say, I read that part of the book, and I thought Andrew would identify with this so much.
Like, why worry about art when you can, like, go eat food?
Putting that on your tombstone. And they invite the former Sandalford Warren rabbits to tell a story. And Dandelion tells the story of El Harira, who is basically Rabbit Jesus, who like tricks a king into stealing all his lettuce. Now, this is going to be the first passage I read, because Rabbit Jesus has a friend named Rabscuddle. Could have gone with Judas, but they picked Rabscuddle. And the big trick that they use is they trick the king into thinking that all the lettuce is spoiled. Here's how. As soon as Rabscuddle got inside the king's palace, he scurried off and went into one of the dark burrows, and here he hid all day. There were no soldiers in the storerooms, and Rabscuddle hid there in the dark, and he did all he could do to make the food bad, except what he ate himself.
Ew.
So you're a bunny, you're on the run, your home is probably going to be destroyed because your psychic friend told you so, and these people take you in, and they say, oh, cool, tell us a story, and you're like, I'll tell the story about how Rabbit Jesus' friend peed on all the lettuce.
I think we've established that Richard Adams does not know like what people want to hear in a story.
And so then, what do you think the reaction is? All these weird, like, art-making bunnies are like, that's a cool story. Weird. It's almost like you believe it. And they throw a bunch of shade on their, like, bunny religion.
Atheist bunnies?
Yeah. Now, the thing that ends this passage is that they realize that a man, has been keeping these bunnies safe, killing other animals, giving them food that they can take back to their warren in the hopes that they will fall into traps. And this is Bigwig actually ends up getting caught in a trap, and this is how they realize that this is not a warren that they want to stay in. What?
Shocking.
It is shocking. We are blowing people's minds right now. And this also gets in. I want to hear your thoughts on this, having watched the movie, Andrew, because one of the running threads of this is like, is this appropriate for kids? Like, let me tell you a story.
I know the answer, but let's hear the story first.
Let me tell you a story about a bunny where this happens. Hazel goes over this hill and he sees Bigwig trapped in this snare. Bigwig was lying on his side, his back legs kicking and struggling. A length of twisted copper wire, gleaming dully in the first sunlight, was looped around his neck and ran taut across one forepaw to the head of a stout peg driven into the ground. The running knot had pulled tight and was buried in the fur behind his ear. The projecting point of one strand had lacerated his neck, and drops of blood, dark and red as yew berries, how beautiful, welled one by one down his shoulder. For a few minutes he lay panting, his side heaving in exhaustion. Then again began the struggling and fighting, backward and forward, jerking and falling until he choked and lay quiet.
Daddy, we don't want to hear any more of the story. Daddy.
Mommy, make him stop. Yeah, it's pretty gruesome. This book doesn't pull punches. It does not pull rabbit punches.
I mean, it happens in the movie too. And yeah, Bigwig gets caught in the snare, and like blood is streaming out of his mouth, like
it's
cartoon bunny blood.
Yeah, and they have to chew the peg out of the ground.
Yeah,
so they're like, oh,
and they think he's dead for like a second, and yeah. but then he ends up not being,
because Bigwig's the best.
Yeah, no, Bigwig's cool.
Yeah, who was it that asked us on our Goodreads group? Asked us which bunny you would want to be friends with.
Definitely Bigwig.
Bigwig.
Bigwig is like the Dwayne The Rock Johnson of bunnies.
Yeah. If you smell. Oh. Yeah, that's it. That's the one. That's the reference for you, a number one wrestling fan, Andrew Cunningham.
Love wrestling.
So they get out of that warren real fast because they don't want to be there. They free Bigwig. They do pick up a bunny named Strawberry, who leaves there. I love when I can hear people go, ugh. Who leaves
better
that...
Better than cowslip.
who leaves that warren, and he's like, he doesn't even want to talk about it. He's just like, take me with you. So they end up at this place called Watership Down. It takes them a long time to get there. It's a lot of work. And they finally, like, bunnies don't like being out in the open. One of the interesting parts of perspective of this book is you, like, these bunnies like tall grass because they like being able to hide in it. So it's weird when they're, like, passing open fields and stuff. So they end up at this place, Watership Down. They make themselves a warren there. And this is really what we want to talk about. We're about the middle of the show. We want to talk about this. He looks around. Let me find the quote. Let me see if I have it here.
I need this quote.
Yeah.
I need it.
Uh-huh. So Hazel looks around at his friends, and he says, "We're doing well here. But all the same, there's something on my mind. I'm surprised, as a matter of fact, that I should be the first one of us to start thinking about it. Unless we can find the answer, then this warren's as good as finished. In spite of all we've done, we have no does. Not one. And no does means no kittens, and in few years, no warren. My friends, there are no ladies at Watership Down."
And we're going to talk about this a little bit, is like how not feminist this book is, like at all. Like no women do anything except like be saved and have kids. But like, yeah, they do. Like, this is the first half of the movie. I don't know where this happens in the book, where they get to the land of milk and bunny. And then they get there, and they're like, "We did a great job. Wait, where's all the chicks?"
Yeah, and it's
a total sausage. It's a carrot fest up here.
Okay. Okay. One of the things that we did not cover as... Yeah, it's pretty bad. One of the other things about the women in this book... Now, this is a thing that some... all my papers are messed up. But a couple folks have written about this, basically saying, you know, we didn't talk about this. Richard Adams based a lot of his bunny knowledge on a book called The Private Life of the Rabbit. Ooh. by his friend something Lockley.
Ryan Lochte.
Not Ryan. Oh, God. And in an article written in the New York Times by Selma Lanes, you know, she points out that even in Lockley's book, that the nursing doe can drive away large cats from a nesting site, that she would defend her kin, and that is not present in this book at all.
Yeah, it's very much like, oh, like the boy bunnies decide to run away because the psychic one told them so.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have that adventure, and then they realize they need women. And then, like, we can run through the last half of the book, I think, because we have other stuff we want to talk about. But the entire second half was about finding women, basically.
Yes.
And, like, none of these female bunnies are given, like, any agency at all. And
no,
they're not characters. They don't really have relationships to speak of with any of the protagonists that we've been following so far.
You know how some of the bunnies that we've met have, like, cool names, like Cowslip? The female bunny names are, like, they don't get a cool translation from the Lapine language, from the French word Lapin for bunny, excuse me. They get their original names, like Hizenthlay, or Nathilta, or Thuthanang. Yeah, that's easy to say. You could be Strawberry.
It's a Lovecraft monster, I think.
The dark god Thuthanang. So yeah, they have to go off and find these mothers for their warren, or else it'll die. They befriend this giant bird named Kahar.
In the cartoon, it's clearer that that's like onomatopoeia for the caw noises
that it's making.
Yeah,
yeah. One of the weird things about this book that also happens is that any character that's not a bunny that talks to the bunnies speaks in like this weird like pigeon language. Not like a pigeon language.
Don't be racist.
I know. To listen to Kahar speak is to say, Ise you know getting mutters. Ise finish mutters. Plenty trouble for you. Good job, Kahar.
Good job.
Listen, I get pig fine plan. I go fine now. Ving e better. Vind finished and I fly. Fly for you. Mm-hmm. My name, Kahar. It's like a mix between... what's his name from the Star Wars? It's like Jar Jar Binks and someone
Star Wars.
Not that awful.
It's like Jar Jar Binks and like Super Mario.
Thank you so much for Tamisa Jar Jar Binks. So they use Kahar to scout out a place to get more mutters for their warren. They end up finding this place called Ephrafa.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know how to put all this, like, the emphasis on these words, because Richard Adams put footnotes in there, and Ephrafa is pronounced like majesty, or El Harira is pronounced like never say die. It's very helpful, author man. I know. You're making a good face.
I got nothing.
Ephrafa is run by General Woundwort, who is the most terrifying bunny that you'll ever meet. And he runs this, like, police state where because he watched his mom get eaten by a weasel and his dad get shot by a man, he's decided to keep all his rabbits safe by, like, separating them into groups and preventing when they can feed. And he, like, rules with an iron fist.
Okay. It's interesting in the book that he has motivation because in the movie he's just an evil bunny.
Yeah.
And he's, like, that's why. He's evil because he's evil.
Richard Adams really fast-forwards through that backstory, and they never revisit it.
Okay.
So the latter half of the book is them launching this elaborate heist to steal women from Ephrafa. It's kind of messed up.
Nice.
But when you get there, you realize that Hizenthlay
also has the rabbit second sight, and like she foretold that this was going to happen. So she like started.
But nobody paid attention to her because she was a woman.
Yeah. I can't. Yeah. And when they get there, they find a receptive audience of women who are ready to break free, and they also find a man named a rabbit named Blackavar, who also tried to like run away. And he's been like beaten to a bloody pulp, and every time they go out to feed, he is like there, and everyone has to look at him. Like, this is what happens. Run away. Look at the Blackavar. And he's great. I like him a lot.
So I'll fast forward through what happens in the movie.
Please
tell me what's different that's important,
and
then we'll start winding down a little bit. So they successfully escape.
They do.
With the help of the bird.
Yeah.
Who swoops down and flies in General Woolworth's face or whatever his
name is. Not Woolworth's.
Yeah.
That's a store I went to as a kid. It used to be called the Five and Dime.
Oh, neat.
Neat.
Neat fact.
Yeah.
Hashtag store facts.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so that happens. There's like a big crazy lightning storm, and it's like really dramatic.
Right.
Okay, so it's important that Blackberry invented boats earlier in the book, because their three-part plan was have Bigwig infiltrate Efrafa.
Which he does, because they're stupid.
Yeah.
Their security measures are just not great.
Bigwig's the best.
Bigwig is the best.
And then he like breaks them all out, and then the bird is the second part of the plan. Just bird. And like he helps them attack, and then they have to get on this boat that they don't know what it is, and like Bird's like, you dumb rabbits, it's a boat, get in there.
Mm-hmm.
And like Hazel chews the rope, and then it's the watership,
and they
get it?
They drift off on the watership, they get back to the hill, but the general follows them.
Yes.
Because he hates Bigwig, he wants his bunnies back.
Yes.
And he and Bigwig have a big climactic confrontation where they literally rip each other's throats out.
Yeah, so this is also, it's pretty messed up. So the way that Bigwig wins, and he only sort of wins, he basically holds off Woundwort, while Hazel's awesome plan that they got from a psychic vision by Fiverr was to release the dog from the nearby farm. Yeah.
And I wrote in my notes that this was Chekhov's dog, because... We were introduced to this dog earlier in the film.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So Woundwort and Bigwig get in this big fight in Watership, the Warren, and I'll just read the whole thing. Suddenly, Woundwort leaped forward in a single bound and landed full against Bigwig like a branch falling from a tree. He made no attempt to use his claws. His great weight was pushing chest to chest against Bigwig's. Putting his last strength into the effort to remain where he was, Bigwig loosed his teeth from Woundwort's shoulder and dropped his head like a cart horse straining at a load. Still, he was slipping. His claws had a hold of the ground. Woundwort's teeth sunk in his back and was snuffling and choking. Though Bigwig did not know it, his earlier blows had torn Woundwort across the nose, his nostrils were full of his own blood, and with jaws closed in Bigwig's fur, he could not draw his breath. A moment more, he had let go of his hold. Bigwig, utterly exhausted, lay where he was, and then Woundwort has to, like, get away, and later the dog shows up and almost eats him. But yeah, what? I didn't know the end of this book was bunny MMA. I'm trying to make a like Ronda Rousey joke in my head, and I can't.
Daddy. Don't you think there's been enough death already, Daddy?
Funnily enough, none of the main characters die in this book, even though I was waiting for it to happen. Though, inconsequentially, like two does just get eaten. And they're like, oh, that's a shame.
Hmm. Yeah, too bad.
It's really messed up.
There's also in the movie, I don't know if this is in the book, the most horrifying sequence in the movie is like, so you find out what happened to the bunnies who didn't leave.
Oh, yeah.
And the people who are building this housing development come back and they fill in the Warren. And they like gas the bunnies, and so the movie is giving you this very like artfully drawn illustration of bunnies suffocating, and it's like it's a lot. It was a lot for me. I'm a 30-year-old man.
Before they look around and realize that they need some ladies, Holly and Blueberry show up, and Blueberry is like this vaudevillian jokester, and Holly's like, "We just survived like a massacre," and he tells the story and he starts talking about the like things that they
put in the rabbit holes to gas them all. And at one point, I think Bigwig's like, don't be grim. And he's like, I haven't even started.
I think he's just quoting his daughters. Daddy, don't be grim.
Don't be grim. Oh, buckle up, Joyce. Let's go. I don't know if that's...
All right, so... And then like the good bunnies prevail, and that's pretty much the end of it.
Yeah, the end has two little touchstones with the rabbit mythology, where Hazel, like, there's an epilogue where Hazel dies of old age, and like Rabbit Jesus shows up and is like, "Hey, do you want to join my like heaven police?" I'm translating from the bunny. He's like, "You join my like Ausla in the sky,
heaven police this fall on ABC." They're not all angels.
Woundwort also doesn't explicitly die. Like, I read those three pages a couple of times over to try and figure out what happened to him. He just escaped, and they equate him. He becomes like a mythological figure, similar to the Black Rabbit of Inlay, who is the Bunny Grim Reaper. And there's a whole story where El Harira, the Prince of a Thousand Enemies, has to go and like attempt to sacrifice himself, Rabbit Jesus style, to the Bunny Grim Reaper. And the Bunny Grim Reaper like makes him play like a game and like tell a story, and he keeps ripping off all his rabbit parts. And then he's like, "No, it's fine, I'll go save him anyway."
Nobody knows about any of this, which is why I hate the commercialization of Easter. Like, we've lost sight of what the holiday was supposed to be about.
I'm going to think about that next time I eat a chocolate bunny.
As we start to wind down, I have a quote from our text thread earlier today. And I quote, this is you: "Make sure you ask me about rabbit fetuses."
Yeah.
So, Craig, what about rabbit fetuses?
So, when all the male bunnies are justifying why some of the ladies would want to come with them, and at this point they come up with this plan before they even know that it's General Woundwort's police state. They just know that it's a war and there are probably too many ladies there.
Probably.
Their theory is...
Who can tell? Who can, like, who can even count them?
You get past four, you have no idea. Their plan is, like, if warrens are overcrowded... this happened. Holly explains to Strawberry. Strawberry's like, "Why would this happen?" "That's because you've never been overcrowded. But our warren was overcrowded a year or two back, and a lot of the younger does were reabsorbing their litters before they were born. The Thrira told me that long ago, El Harira made a bargain with Frith, Sky Guy. Frith promised him that rabbits were not to be born dead or unwanted. If there's little chance of a decent life for them, it's a doe's privilege to take them back into her body unborn." Richard Adams, what is your deal? Now, this is a real thing. I couldn't find a Wikipedia page about it, so maybe it's not a real thing. But there were multiple rabbit forums that I was reading this morning where people were wondering what happens when their does don't have the babies. And apparently they can reabsorb the soft tissue back into their body.
No, the female body has a way of shutting that all down.
But then they just have, like, mummified baby bunnies in there.
Ooh, really?
That's a real thing.
Whoa, gross.
But then later, sometimes, if the bunnies are able to have children, the Tutankhamun bunnies will come out. Thank you for making that a bit of a slow burn. I wasn't expecting that. Yeah, it's real messed up. This book does not hold back. And so I was surprised to, like, discover it in the realm of children's literature.
Yeah, like what age is it appropriate for? Or do you think, like, they gotta learn about death sometime?
I don't know. Once you hit double digits, this book's for you.
Okay.
Because it's either appropriate...
It's gonna be on the jacket.
Yeah. It's either very appropriate for you, or you're like a precocious double-digit kid, and you're like, tell me about the mummified bunny fetuses. Tell me about the crazy bunny god. Tell me about the bunnies drowning in blood. Like, let's go. What's interesting to me about this book, in comparison to other adventure and fantasy novels like it, is that it, to me anyway, it resists an easy, like, allegory. Did you find that when you were watching the story? Like, I don't... There are themes
like
of, like...
If I was the Netflix, like, what comes... Like, what to watch, things like this, algorithm, like, I wouldn't know what to recommend.
I mean,
that.
House of Cards might come up, but... I don't know for certain. Like, there isn't a...
There's that scene where Kevin Spacey rips that guy's throat out with his teeth. Spoilers for House of Cards.
It doesn't have, a like, an Animal Farm allegory. It doesn't... I don't know. There isn't a clear one-to-one. I feel like
there is. I mean, you haven't read Redwall ever.
No, I have not.
And especially, like, of the first few books in that series before it became even more, like, sterile and like kid, like I don't know how many people read like the dozen Redwall books that I read, but eventually they just all became the same book. Like, it was a very specific formula. But early on, yeah, there was a little bit more of the like blood and gore and
yeah,
and stuff that Watership Down is doing.
Interesting. But does that correlate to a specific, like, is it a World War II story? Is it a Vietnam story? Why did I pick that? Is it a like, you know? Is
oh,
it
you mean you can't,
allegory
you can't
for
think
90s
of the
rock bands?
Clear, like, real world allegory. No, not,
yeah, I don't think
really,
there is
no.
one.
Yeah.
I think he's much more in the vein of something like a Lord of the Rings, which, as we talked, has
well, I mean
about,
that's
a
Tolkien
thing.
Insisted it was not allegory, but
methink like Tolkien doth protest too much.
Yeah, exactly. The last thing I wanted to talk about, like going back to the gender stuff, was in 1996 there was a short story collection called Tales from Watership Down. It's kind of a sequel to this. And those did focus a little bit more on the female rabbits.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe this is just like Richard Adams being a product of his time and not so much being a monster or whatever. I don't know.
No, I don't think he's a monster. I think he was trying to tell the gripping tale that he could to some little girls who really liked bunnies and wanted to scar them for the rest of their lives.
Bad job, Dad.
Yeah, or great job, Dad. Yeah, and then it seems like in that short story collection, he kind of course-corrected a little bit. I think this book is great, and the adventure's awesome. With that in mind, it is weird to read in the 21st century.
Right.
Especially because some of the scholarship that's like, there you claim you based it on this dude's like book about bunnies, and you left out all the part where like lady bunnies are cool too. Like, you made one of them a psychic, and good job,
right.
I guess.
I mean, it's the same thing with the movie, though. Like, there are a lot of... It was done in, like, the late 70s before animation was, like, as... I don't know. It wasn't, like, as easy to automate with computers and stuff as it is now. And it's really impressive, like, what emotions they evoke just by taking a stock, like, still image and, like, zooming in on part of it.
Oh, like Ren and Stimpy.
I don't even know. Like so...
Like that thing where it'd be, like, Ren and Stimpy, and then all of a sudden they go...
Not like...
Ah!
No, not
it's
like
a
that.
Really high-res painting.
No, just...
Of snot.
No, just taking the background of a scene. Like, if you're in a Warren or something, like, they will create the sense of traveling through the Warren just by panning around on, like, a still image.
That's clever.
And it, like, is as disturbing as some of the scenes in it are, it is like really artfully constructed. Yeah. So it's on Hulu. That's where I watched it.
Oh. Hulu.
Exactly. And if you haven't watched it,
it's a rabbit word for TV.
Yeah. That's all I got.
That's
man.
All we that's... got. Thanks you guys for coming out. We gotta thank some folks. We thanked you just now. Andrew, who else do we have to thank?
We want to thank the Tattooed Mom, which is the bar you're in now. Go buy all their drinks.
All of them.
All of them. We want to thank Bridge Set Sound for recording, Wildfire Radio for streaming the show, Fireball Printing, Pyroglyphic Studio, who did the promo art for the show, and the Philadelphia Podcasting Society.
Yeah. And thanks all those guys. We have some, there's some like coasters and bookmarks on that table that's over there by you came in. We have more of them. If they run out, we'll try and throw them around the bar. Laura's holding up a bag. Great. And if you have never listened to this show before and you want to find out more, just go to overduepodcast.com. You'll find all the nonsense there.
Yes, and we're also on Twitter and Facebook at Overdue Pod. So, yeah.
Thanks for coming out. Say the thing, Andrew.
Thank you so much. Everybody, try to be happy.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.